Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, here at the Education Gadfly Show, online at edexcellence.net. Please join me in welcoming my co-host, a man they call the pirate of the education policy community, Rick Hess.
Hey, Mike, how you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good. I heard you had an incident with the famed televised pirate this week.
Pirates!
What was the story?
So Fox News asked me to come on the show, talk about Arne Duncan's comment about extending learning time, you know, longer school day, longer school year.
What were you going to say?
So I was going to say that, you know, this sure, it makes sense if you've got a good academic program. Doesn't make sense if you got a failing school, just tack on extra time, you know. Basic talking points.
Mm-hmm.
So there I am in the studio with the Capitol behind me. I got my makeup on. I got my earpiece in. They've already done the sound check. I mean, literally, we're any minute now, they're going to start the live segment. And then they just keep going on and on and on about the pirates taking over some American ship, and the Americans fought them back. And they got no details. This is classic TV. You know, they all this banter, but they I mean, nothing, no substance. But I understand it was probably going to be a hard segue to go from the pirates to, and now, should we have a longer school day?
And you're already in your makeup with an earring. You could have been Johnny Depp to that part.
I know. So the thing is, I'm such a enthusiast about media that I told him that I would come back tomorrow.
Oh, dude.
I've got no self-respect.
The dog that's been kicked to the curb.
I had to call my grandma back and tell her. Oh. Thing. And my grandfather said, I told Nani, that's right, I said the pirates, they must have kicked you off because of the pirates.
Oh.
Anyway, well, but we don't have time to moan about this. We have a lot to cover today, Rick.
Okay.
Especially since we were not here last week, and we had April Fool's.
We had Britney Spears.
April Fool's, that's right. I hope people enjoyed our April Fool's Day Gladfly podcast, which some people did not appreciate. We heard from a few listeners who were a little disappointed by the string of Britney Spears songs that we provided for them. To which I say, happy April Fool's Day. Okay, let's get started. We're going to play Pardon the Gadfly. We're going to hear our research minute. We're going to rate that reform. Christina, let's get started with Pardon the Gadfly.
Topic one. Arne Duncan released a boatload of guidance about the stimulus bill last week. Governors will have to sign assurances in order to get the money, promising to work on issues including standards, data, interventions for failing schools, and teacher quality. Is there any reason to believe this will lead to positive reforms?
Now, before you jump in, Rick, I was reminded yesterday that in the education world, we always try to provide at least, you know, two or three or four positive things before we provide a criticism, you know, whether we're talking to students or parents or colleagues. And so keep that in mind.
Okay. Well, then I'm going to start positive. I'm going to say I think it's terrific that we're going to try this idea of paperwork on the front end, which people are going to promise to spend money in ways that work. It's just something we might not have thought of before. And so hopefully this is going to be an innovative and dynamic solution.
They also deserve credit for getting a lot of stuff out in a short amount of time. This was a lot of guidance. They also came out with their updated Title I regulations last week. I mean, this was a lot of work in a short amount of time with very little staff. They deserve credit for that.
Mm-hmm.
All that said, $100 billion and this is what we get? They're going to ask the states to tell us, you know, whether or not, you know, how many school districts have teacher evaluation systems that take student achievement into account. Let me tell you the answer to that one. Zero. And then tell us if you have a charter school cap. Guess what? I can call Nelson Smith right now and he could tell us which states have a charter school cap.
Yes, but then these metrics are going to be used to drive the fraction of 1% of American K-12 spending that's represented by the Race to the Top fund.
Well, okay, that is the thinking here, is that states are going to have to make some progress in able to get the Race to the Top funds, and maybe that'll work. Maybe Arne will sit down at the table and say, look, State X, if you want this money, I want to see you raise your charter school cap, or I want to see you get rid of that law that disallows you from taking the data from your student data system and linking it with teacher data and using it for evaluation purposes. I mean, maybe that's what's going to happen. If that happens, then we'll give them credit at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, it looks like we are spending $100 billion and getting almost nothing.
We're saving 600,000 jobs, just like Duncan promised out of the gate.
Christina, topic number two.
The Boston Teachers Union is giving the Heisman to Teach for America, who was planning on sending 20 recruits there this fall. Quote, "We already have hundreds of good surplus teachers. We don't need TFA to provide us any additional help," unquote, said the union's president. Quote, "By coming here, you will only make matters worse," unquote. Is that fair?
Ouch. Now again, keep in mind that partly the stimulus was sold as this idea that if we did have to lose a bunch of teacher jobs, it would be Teach for America kinds of jobs that would go away. And look, we got the stimulus and they're still going away. Okay, because yes, there are places like Boston where they don't need more teachers, okay, or they can't afford them because they're holding steady with budgets and all that kind of stuff. And so they're saying we don't want the Teach for America people. Now, I would ask this to Boston. Are you telling me, we're talking about 20 Teach for America people that were planning to go to Boston. Are you telling me there's not 20 teachers in your school system that are not burned out or low performing or, you know, child molesters or something where they deserve to lose their job and could be replaced by Teach for America teachers?
You know, I mean, another interesting thing this points to is one of the things we shy away from is talking honestly about how much teachers cost. Veteran teachers, the kinds of teachers who are getting laid off, have been in the system 5, 7, 10 years, are going to cost $10,000, $12,000, $14,000 more per year than these new hires. In most industries, you actually want to find ways to replace more expensive employees with less expensive employees as long as they're doing, you know, at least the same job. Right? That's not even part of this conversation. We never actually imply that, yes, we should try to find cheaper teachers if they're going to be as good as more expensive teachers.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, that's, you know, what you just said is what unions worry about, and other people too. I mean, we don't want to have a situation where people get laid off just because they turn 50. I mean, that's not fair. We've got protections in law to say, you know, you can't be fired just because of your age. You know, that makes sense.
But this is also the problem of having lockstep correlation between salary and mm-hmm. age, because what you wind up doing is you punish districts for having older employees.
Look, it seems to me we're going to have this situation where if the recession keeps going and it's as bad as it looks like it's going to be, and that it is, you know, there's going to be 2 or 3 or 4 years where a lot of school districts aren't going to be doing any hiring of new teachers. And the question is, what's going to happen down the road to our teaching workforce? I think perhaps Christina has a question about that next.
I was going to say, I'm glad you asked, because meanwhile, the National Commission on Teaching and America's Future is warning that over a third of the nation's teachers might retire in the next 4 years, and that, quote, the traditional teaching career is collapsing at both ends.
Collapsing at both ends!
Yes, as new teachers leave because of low pay and poor working conditions, and older teachers leave because of incentives from pension systems. One solution, let retired teachers keep getting their cushy pensions and get paid extra to mentor young teachers, too. So, is Nick Taff out to lunch?
Michael?
So, okay. Now, what's interesting about this is that, first of all, they don't, as far as I can tell, talk about what we were just mentioning, which is that for the next couple of years, there's not going to be any teacher hiring to speak of in a lot of these districts. Okay, second, yes, there is a real pension crisis, and good for Nick Taff for mentioning it and talking about it. I have to say, I have not read the report in full yet. I'll be curious to know whether they come out and say, you know what, the reason that we have a pension crisis is that we have made promises that we can't afford.
But are they saying there's a pension crisis, or are they saying teachers are being enticed to retire at 25 years?
I guess it's that latter thing.
And so I mean, I have not frequently heard Nick Taff actually worry about the fact that we're stripping operational expenditures.
Right.
To free up dollars for overly generous pensions.
Right. No, that's right. I think they are worried about the incentives of people who could keep teaching, would be happy to keep teaching, but it just doesn't make financial sense for them to keep teaching, so they take the retirement.
The first part of this, the scare line about how a third of our teachers are going to retire in 4 years, we've been hearing versions of this, of course, the last 2 or 3 decades,
mm-hmm.
That in the next 10 years, we're going to retire half our teachers or half our school leaders. And, you know, year in, year out, what we do is we lose 200,000 or 250,000. I mean, I think Nick Taff is right, and Tom Carroll, Executive Director of Nick Taff, has been real good about getting out front and saying, we've got a profession that just doesn't work for the 21st century. Mm-hmm. It's built for the wrong labor market. It's not keeping the people we need. It's not getting the people we need. But the notion that the solution to this is to allow a whole bunch of teachers who are 25 to 30 years in to double dip, keep getting salaries, and collect pensions so they can hang around the backs of classrooms and, you know, whisper kind of boring things to new teachers doesn't strike me as kind of necessarily default solution.
Hmm. Well said, Rick. Well said. And that's all the time we've got for Pardon the Gadfly. Nice. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's confusing with Tom Carroll. There are 2 Tom Carrolls in the education world.
In education, there's probably more than that in the country.
Well, that's true. But there's the Tom Carroll that runs Nick Taff, mm-hmm. and then there's the Tom Carroll that runs a bunch of charter schools in Albany.
And actually, this came up once in EdNext. I think we actually, right? Didn't we reach out to the wrong one for an article
right.
one time?
I think we did. We asked for a letter to the editor from the wrong Tom Carroll.
And they were like, whoa, okay.
I'm not sure why you're asking me about charter schools. All right. Well, it is that time that everybody waits for. We hear from you. We get the fan mail. I mean, we understand. You know, I think Amber's Facebook page is more popular than ever. Let's hear it for Amber Winkler's Research Minute. Actually, Amber, are you on Facebook yet?
I am.
She has not friended Thomas B. Fordham. She also has not friended Michael J. Petrilli. Ouch.
I may have friended you. I'm very selective about who I friend. Sorry.
Amber's
It's just the work and the personal life when they collide. It just, yeah, it's no, kind of strange.
Remember the Costanza problem?
What's the Costanza
from
problem?
Seinfeld. Remember when George is worried about his two worlds colliding?
Yes, of course. It is a problem. Okay, well, Amber, what are we talking about?
We are talking today? About the third year evaluation of the DC voucher program, which was released recently. Big, big deal. Recall, this is a randomized control trial study, or the gold standard, as it's called. It compares the performance of students randomly assigned to receive or not receive a scholarship to a participating private school. The big takeaway, after 3 years, students offered a voucher were performing at statistically higher levels in reading, roughly a three-month gain, compared to students not offered a scholarship. Both groups of students, however, performed similarly in math. The voucher program also improved reading achievement for five of the subgroups examined. The reading finding is particularly striking since the treatment group was highly mobile. Only 3% of the treatment group remained in the same school as when they applied to the program. However, last point, and it's a big however, the evaluation showed that the voucher program did not have a significant impact on those students who applied from the worst performing schools. Unfortunate, yes. Surprising, no. These kids have traditionally taken more time and effort to reach. So perhaps the program might make a difference for them if they had more time and more support. But will Congress allow it to? Dun, 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 dun.
Ah, wow. Ooh. Amber, dramatic. I like that.
Brilliant.
Okay, so lots to talk about here. Let's talk about the study first, and then we can talk about some of the context around it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one bit of context, Amber. So who actually authored the study? It's been talked about a lot.
Yes, Pat Wolfe, Mike Puma at Chesapeake Research Associates, Babette Gutman at Westat. It's like four different organizations came together, so a bunch of different subcontractors.
And these are the organizations that have been contracted by the Department of Education since day one to conduct the long-term evaluation.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, so first of all, this is very important. So the control group, it sounds like, didn't actually stay in their failing public schools, so to speak. A lot of them ended up going to, other private schools and some to other charter schools.
Yeah,
instead of staying put. Is that right?
Well, the control group had 15% of those that didn't stay in their original school where they were supposed to go.
Okay.
But you had even, the treatment group, you had 3% who stayed. So, both groups were pretty mobile in terms of, getting around.
Now the treatment group that was supposed to take the voucher and go to
Right, but I mean, within they switched schools within participating schools.
Okay.
It was a lot of mobility. And normally you expect that in the first, couple years. Mm-hmm. You're not going to see an impact. But still over 3 years, the mobility was pretty high, and yet we still saw an impact.
Yeah. Interesting. And then now these subgroups, were these groups big enough for us to talk about them having a statistical significance?
Yes.
They were. Okay. What was interesting was that it seemed like some of the students in the program, poor students, but poor students who might be somewhat more advantaged, at least they had higher achievement. The girls, for example, did better than the boys. Kids coming from public schools that weren't considered failing under NCLB, those were the kids that did better. I think of this as kind of similar to KIPP, right? People mm-hmm. charge that KIPP might in subtle ways be creaming some, poor kids that aren't quite as poor as other poor kids, or who have maybe families that are a little more plugged in than other poor kids do, to which I say, that's fine. I mean, why do we have to think that a program has to be able to get amazing results with the poorest of the poor kids in the toughest of the tough situations, right?
Mm-hmm. I think that's absolutely an important kind of lesson to keep in mind, because what we always want is we want the silver bullet that's going to improve urban schooling for every single child. And if it doesn't fix schools today for every kid, then we throw it out and go searching for a new bullet. But the one caution we should keep in mind is that when we look at the results in, say, New York City and Dayton, and Washington, D.C., when we see these pretty positive results from the voucher experiments, those of us who are supportive of vouchers and charters should absolutely, not let folks poo-poo these results. Mm-hmm. However, what we're looking at in these cities is an established parochial school system where you've got mm-hmm. strong schools with empty mm-hmm. seats.
Yep.
What we should do is be careful about making claims about how vouchers are going to play out in a place like Utah or Georgia, mm-hmm. where you're not talking about helping kids get out of lousy schools into established
That's
parochial
right.
schools with seats, but where you're hoping that we're going to see the emergence of good private options.
Yeah, Makes sense. That's fair. Now, some of the context. Released on a Friday afternoon, right? A little suspicious. Released a couple of weeks after Congress voted basically to kill the program, with many Democrats saying, well, there's no evidence of effectiveness.
Right.
All looks pretty questionable. IES is supposed to be independent from the rest of the department, but without anybody at its helm right now, looks like, you know, the Arne Duncan team was calling the shots.
Yeah, and there certainly was some, right? There's certainly been some journalistic accounts suggesting there's at least questions about whether or not this was all just natural IES review process.
Right.
Or how much of this was flavored by political considerations.
Right. Now, one more thing to look for. You know, Arne Duncan said that because the program didn't get results for the kids in the toughest public schools, that is reason to pull the plug on it. You know, there's a big similar IES study of charter schools that's supposed to be coming out at some point. I gotta believe, I'm just very skeptical that they're gonna find results that are any more positive than for this voucher program. I am afraid that the Obama administration is gonna find itself in a pickle when it tries to explain why it supports charter schools and not vouchers. You know, unless that study magically finds charter schools to be dramatically more effective, which who really expects
well,
that?
Well, I mean, and the Duncan line is just a nonsensical standard because there's certainly no evidence that Chicago, which got a bunch of acclaim during his 7 years at the helm, showed any persistent success at moving the most disadvantaged students forward.
So we should pull the plug on Chicago.
You know, I mean, that's just, that is a case of kind of moving the goal line in the middle of the game. That's just the question is, are you helping kids? It's clear, you know, there's clearly evidence that this seems to be helping kids. And so for Duncan to say, well, wait a minute, it's not helping the right kids, the ones that we really meant you should be helping.
Yeah.
That's just trying to dodge a political bullet.
Okay, Amber, so what's the song for this one?
I've been trying. I like the song, and we finally found a reason to play it. Again, these are findings worth celebrating. This is predominantly good news, so Kool and the Gang is bringing it with Celebration.
Nice. I like it. I think this is perfectly appropriate because as we learned from Education Week recently, almost all of these IES random assignment studies find no results, no positive findings. So this one found some positive results.
Yeah, this is that's actually the iron law of evaluation. Is the expected finding of any of any well-designed evaluation is nothing. So this is actually
a big deal.
But I'm surprised, given that, Amber, that you didn't go as over the top. Remember we had like Bloody Sunday. I'm surprised you didn't have like some Christian gospel music about salvation as a man.
I mean, this was Celebration. That's pretty good.
You got to listen to the Friedman Foundation podcast for that.
Yeah, that's
one.
Right.
But they will celebrate.
Are they
the voucher study.
Now?
No, I'm just teasing.
Because
they love vouchers. So
I know, but I could hear Paul DePern and Bob Enloe kind of.
Maybe they do.
They'd be fun podcasters.
They would be. Absolutely.
I could listen to Bob Enloe for half an hour.
All right. So, Stafford, here's the deal. We went kind of long with that segment, so we need to rate that reform to be about, I don't know, 30 seconds long. Go.
All right.
And the peppy music should help you right along.
I love the peppy music.
That's good music.
All right. We'll keep it short. So are you worried that your kids are going to root around in your hard drive and find something that they shouldn't?
No.
Give it a few years, Mike.
What do you think's on my hard drive?
You haven't met the teacher in this story. You could upgrade your password protection. You could teach your kids better manners, or you could simply delete the offending materials. Or if you're an idiot, you could put those files, which by the way were a bunch of porn, on your work computer. Usually we pity substitute teachers for falling victims to the pranks of kids, but this unlucky sub, it was the absent teacher who was the source of all the mischief. The sub was supposed to be showing a computer presentation to the class, but he was having trouble finding the right file on the absent teacher's computer. Thinking he had finally found it, the sub opened a porn film instead.
Oh.
The good news is that the sub also hadn't figured out how to connect the computer to the overhead projector, so only a handful of students who were sitting near the computer saw the salacious film. School is investigating. Anyway, I know this is not really a rate that reform because it's not really reform to put porn on your work computer, but I thought this story was very amusing. And I also was left with a number of questions, such as, what was the file titled?
I don't know, but you think about the Gates small school formula, rigor, relationships, relevance. It sounds like a reform to me, man.
Wow. All right. Well, that was that was short, and that was wow, and that is all the time we got for this week. I think Rick is not going to be with us next week because he's going to be sitting at a bar at the AERA
conference. I'll be out there. I'll be doing my field of research, baby.
You want to tell your fans out there where they can find you?
Marriott Hotel Bar, 4 o'clock every day, folks.
Okay. You heard it here first. Maybe you can send us a little audio, audio report.
Where we can
from
go.
The field.
I'll do it.
All right. Till next time.
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute's Education Gadfly Show at edexcellence.net. Signing off.